Good afternoon and welcome to the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It's Friday, the 4th of April, 2025. It is program number 1350 of the Lunchroom, and I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Of course, in addition to 101.1 FM radio, you can also get us at our website. It is rcistlucia.com. You can download our previous shows on that platform. And we are also up and running on Facebook. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. And please be sure to like and share that as well with your friends and family. If you want to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, the number to do so is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And as well, the number for our WhatsApp is 724-0008. You can always message in on that WhatsApp number. Again, it is 724-0008. Now, some birthday greetings for today. We first want to send out birthday greetings to Mr. Donnell Bob. Happy, happy birthday to you, sir. And we do hope that you're having a wonderful birthday celebration. It is also the birthday of the island's Minister for Health, Wellness, and the Aged. And he is the Honorable Moses Jean-Baptiste, and we do hope that he's having a fantastic birthday as well. And we also want to send birthday greetings to Miss Zaina Pamphil. Happy, happy birthday to you, Zaina. And we do hope that you're having a splendid and wonderful birthday, and hope, of course, you enjoy the weekend. We now move on to some history for today, and we go back into time to the year 1655, which saw the Battle of Porto Farina, where an English fleet defeated the Barbary pirates in Tunis, part of the Barbary Wars. In the year 1789, the first U.S. Congress began regular sessions during George Washington's presidency, and that happened at Federal Hall in New York City. 1949, on this day, the North Atlantic Treaty was signed in Washington, D.C., establishing the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, a military alliance between Western nations. 1968, on this day, U.S. civil rights activist Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated by James Earl Ray, and that happened at the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. 1973, on this day, the World Trade Center opened in New York as the world's tallest building at 110 stories. And unfortunately, of course, we know it was later destroyed during the 9/11 attacks. And 1975, on this day, Microsoft was founded as a partnership between Bill Gates and Paul Allen to develop and sell BASIC interpreters for the Altair 8800, a computer at that time. We now move on to our dish of the day. The daily dish is brought to you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus. Satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus. Need all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also glad that's way and vanity. Box, doors, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bossage, Grosley Lane, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
Welcome back to our program for today. We do hope that you're having a good one. Unfortunately, around the world, one can say that perhaps many people are experiencing indigestion and heartburn as a result of what was dubbed Liberation Day, but may very well be Recession Day for the United States of America. And that has been as a result of the introduction of sweeping tariffs being placed by the United States of America. And those tariffs have implications for for trade, for the imports of goods into the United States of America. We've spoken to this, and I think sometimes maybe it's important to repeat it, because it appears that there's quite a lot of fear, of course, and well, we can well understand, and uncertainty with respect to what is occurring right now. And people are hearing a lot of things. They're hearing about, of course, and it's been quite a roller coaster of initiatives happening by the United States' new administration, the Trump administration, since it's been in January the 20th of this year. Of course, very, very early on, we heard of executive orders largely aimed at the issue of illegal immigration and trying to stymie that effect and trying to effectively close the doors on the individuals coming into the country illegally, which had been identified by the Trump administration, by the Trump campaign team, when they were in the throes of the 2024 general election. But of course, he has now taken aim on the matter of trade and trying to tackle what is seen by his support base and by some individuals as what they've deemed as the deindustrialization of the United States of America. The United States, once upon a time, certainly depended far more significantly on the manufacturing sector, the production of goods, of products, which of course range from everything from military production to airplanes to ships to household appliances to cars and other forms of vehicles, and of course in food products, furniture, you name it. Certainly the U.S. was once upon a time a major production powerhouse, and that I think peaked somewhere in the 1950s in the post-World War II era, where the size of the economy, the size of manufacturing sector and output as compared to the entire economy was perhaps in the region of, I think, nearly 30%. Since then, it has come down significantly. And certainly, the rate of that occurring has increased perhaps since the 1990s, where we saw the rapid industrialization of China. And that, of course, was in very great measure to the opening up of China, more capitalist-driven economic policies, the likes of Deng Xiaoping being very influential in opening up and making China a lot more attractive to investment. And so, of course, a lot of companies decided to take industry out of the United States. And this is not a trend only for the United States, but other parts of the world too, like Europe. And we saw a significant boom in industrialization in China, but as well in many other Asian countries. And that trend is continuing. It is certainly a trend which had been identified and had been recommended by none other than Sir William Arthur Lewis back when he proposed his recipe or remedy towards how countries can in fact grow their economies, and the need for taking people out of the agricultural sector, that surplus labor, unlimited supplies of labor coming out of the rural sector and heading into the industrial sector. And so that model, of course, has been successfully, very, very successfully utilized in China, and of course to their benefit, to the extent that today they have become the leading factory of the world. They have become the manufacturing giant of the world right about now. Of course, China itself is trying to expand its economy into lots and lots of other areas. Now, what we have also going on at the very same time is, and what, of course, we should also mention that the U.S. was able to do so because its companies, of course, were the ones establishing these factories. And you saw that these multinationals were able to do so. So we look at a massive company like Apple, for example. They depend on China for the actual production of Apple phones. But what is critical is that the technology, the know-how, the software, the R&D that is going into developing an Apple phone, yes, some of it is being done in China now, but it largely still resides in other parts of the world, whether it was in California and whatnot. And of course, well, we saw that with the Silicon Valley and the rise of these technology companies, which really revolutionized the way we do business, the way everything happens in this world today. And so, of course, the ICT revolution, the growth of telecommunications, all of these things were driven in large measure by the successes of the United States economic system. And so, in as much as the manufacturing components were not necessarily in the U.S., certainly they decided that they could produce and manufacture goods cheaper in other parts of the world. And of course, so that has been to the benefit of China, that has been to the benefit of Korea, and many other countries right now, to the extent that when you even think about China and some of the things that you would associate maybe being produced in China, a lot of them are actually shifting to other Asian countries because Chinese labor is actually not as cheap as it was before. And so you've got the likes of Bangladesh and Indonesia and of course, Vietnam becoming significant players now in a lot of the low-cost items, textiles and furnishings and lots of other things now, in fact, being produced, not even in China, but sometimes by Chinese-owned companies and other companies from around the world in those other countries. And so the whole thrust regarding the Trump administration has been an argument that, look, America needs to get back into its heyday of industrialization. Is this necessarily a good thing for the United States of America? And, of course, some may argue that countries do need industrial capacity. There's no doubt about it. And you've seen the importance of it, of industrialization, also from the perspective of the ability to respond to a security need within the context of your country. And so in that sense, this whole idea that, look, you've got to have a very strong industrial base and know-how to be able to do those things in the event that you may end up going into a significant war. How are you going to be able to manufacture and produce from your defense perspectives, but also, of course, for your own local demand? And so, mind you, we have been, for the past easily, you could say 100 years, the world has been sort of shifting towards a desire to increase global trade. And certainly the United States of America has been one of the leading proponents of this thrust towards liberalization of trade, the removal of barriers to trade, the various impediments, including that of tariffs, we are now seeing what has been one of the most stark changes in United States policy, economic policy, for easily perhaps nearly a century. And people are talking, and the economists and the economic historians are going back in time, way back into like the years 1909, right? And are indicating that the last time that U.S. tariffs were effectively this high was back in that period of time, even before World War One, right? And they've, of course, also spoken about the attempts at introducing tariffs later on, like in the 1920s and 1930s, which then led to the greatest depression that the U.S. and the world had ever seen, which is the Great Depression of the 1930s, and have ascribed that had been as a result in very large measure to that of the imposition of extensive tariffs by the United States of America. And so we now find ourselves, of course, in this new era of a trade war, which the United States has decided to take on effectively by putting up tariffs. Now, a tariff, let's remember what this is. This is a tax that the United States is putting on its citizens, right? This is going to impact the U.S. consumer, the U.S. citizen, in terms of the cost that that individual is now going to have to pay for an imported good. And of course, depending on where that good is coming from now, they in fact have brought this forward. Now, the United States, of course, has been arguing that these are reciprocal tariffs, but in all honesty, they are not. And when you actually look at, and of course, there have been many economists and individuals who've been looking at the actual tariffs that exist with many of these countries, what you're seeing is that in the case of, say, the effective tariff for U.S. goods going into Europe, many have said that it's probably about maybe 2%. And the same could be said for Japan as well. Very, very low tariffs on U.S. products. The United States, of course, has argued many other things, but it appears that even the methodology which has been utilized to come up with this new tariff regime actually seems more to do with just an analysis of what is the proportion of the deficit that the United States faces against each country. So, and this is, in fact, is what we will perhaps try to look at right now. We have some clips, I think, which have been lined up, which give some sense to exactly what is wrong with the way that some of these tariffs are, in fact, being calculated. It's a little long, and it'll take us over our 1:30 mark, but I think we'll try to play it. It's entitled, "The Bizarre Way Trump's Team Calculated Reciprocal Tariffs." The bizarre way that Trump's team calculated reciprocal tariffs. Let's take a listen.
It was among at least a few people who stumbled upon a very strange discovery yesterday about how the Trump administration went about calculating which countries should be hit with what reciprocal tariffs.
It's so simple that it seemed improbable that they would have done it this way. But I think initially my reaction was just like, no way. And then it was like, oh yes, way, of course.
I'll show you the math trade experts say is so crude and misleading. The ones we spoke to all had the same reaction.
The way they calculated this just simply doesn't make any sense.
I'm surprised that they actually had a formula. It seemed like the tariffs were sort of random and plucked from air, and it wasn't clear what criteria one was going to use.
Now, yesterday was a big day for Trump. Liberation Day. The announcement of universal and reciprocal tariffs against almost every single country on Earth. And the key prop of the afternoon was this chart.
It's very windy out here. We didn't want to bring out the big charts because it had no chance of standing.
That giant board was page one of a list of new reciprocal tariffs against more than 180 countries, which is almost all of them. And you can't make it out so far away, but if I show you the original image that board was made from, you can see the second column corresponding to each country is labeled in fine print, tariffs charged to the USA. And then, in even finer print, including currency manipulation and trade barriers. And every country shows a different number. So to translate, this is what the Trump administration says. It calculated for every single country what tariff they effectively put on U.S. goods, if you factor in not just their tariffs, but also all kinds of unfair things those countries do to put America at a disadvantage.
For nations that treat us badly, we will calculate the combined rate of all their tariffs, non-monetary barriers, and other forms of cheating.
Except the actual math of their calculation is so rudimentary and does not directly relate at all, as advertised, to actual tariffs or currency or trade barriers. What they appear to have done was to take the U.S. trade deficit in physical goods with each country, divided by total U.S. imports of goods from that country, turn that into a percentage, and that's it. That's what they misleadingly call tariffs charged to the USA. And if I actually do the math for you, you'll see why this doesn't make any sense. Take China. We can find from government figures what the U.S. trade deficit with them was last year, and that's $295.4 billion. If you divide that number by total U.S. imports from China that same year, that's $438.9 billion. One number divided by the other, and what you get is 67.3%. And sure enough, this is the tariff the Trump White House accuses China of charging. Problem is, this number is clearly not derived at all from any tariff China charges.
The fact that we know now that it was a simple division of two numbers is perhaps a bit embarrassing to the administration.
Now, I've manually checked all 185 countries on this list. Took me about 3 hours. And every single tariff appeared to have been calculated this same way. The White House would eventually publish this explanation, where they show a more complicated-looking formula, except we can break this down too. And this might be a bit much, but for transparency, let's dive right in. The effective tariff rate, that's this series of symbols and letters on the left, that's what they're trying to figure out for each country, right? And to get there, they take into account how sensitive customers are to higher prices and how likely prices are to increase, which they set at 4 and 0.25, respectively. But multiply them, and they effectively cancel each other out to equal simply 1. And we know that multiplying anything by 1 does nothing. So clean that up, and you're left with something a lot more straightforward, where X is defined as total goods exports, M is total goods imports. Subtract one from the other. That's what a trade imbalance in goods is. And if it's a deficit, that divided by total imports is basically what we said from the start.
It doesn't even attempt to measure what those tariffs are. They're not measuring other countries' tariffs. It's not measuring other countries' non-tariff measures. It's not even measuring currency manipulation. It's just taking the trade deficit as an ipso facto reflection of those things.
Now, the thing is, if you really think about it, you can kind of understand why the U.S. government would see their math as some kind of approximation for how unfair each country is being. Because mathematically, what you're doing when you take a trade deficit divided by total imports is you're measuring what percentage of what that country sells to you goes unmatched by what you sell to them. That's what a trade deficit is, how much more they sell to you than you sell to them. But it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Just to use an analogy, we as households, we as consumers, we have trade surpluses and trade deficits with different entities in the economy. Most of us run a massive trade deficit with our grocery store. Most of us have a massive trade surplus with our employer. They pay us, but we don't buy anything from them. Are these things that are problems that we need to remedy? So in some sense, the underlying premise that bilateral trade imbalances are necessarily bad is just wrong.
But Trump thinks they're bad. He would prefer to be the seller making money as opposed to the buyer spending it, which he's allowed to think. But again, this claim of his that all these numbers on this list are effectively the tariff rates that countries charge the U.S. when they're just not at all, and then to use those simplistic calculations to in turn inform the actual reciprocal tariff that, as a matter of official trade policy, the U.S. is going to then impose on actual products from real businesses all over the world?
You're going to have a lot of people out there believing something that's not true, namely that Vietnam has a tariff rate of 90% on U.S. exports and Cambodia has a tariff rate of 97%. So that's just bad, right? It just gives people a false view of the world.
You know, Trump wields tariffs as a serious weapon of global trade.
The word tariff to me is the most beautiful word in the entire dictionary, okay?
We've seen how even the simple threat of tariffs can erase trillions of dollars in stock market value and force companies on every side of the border into a decision-making tailspin because they don't know how to plan their supply chains in the face of such wacky numbers.
We may have short-term some little pain, and people understand that.
And Trump would say this works towards a noble and important goal, which is to restore the economic engine of American manufacturing. Except, this most recent attempt to level the playing field, it isn't supported by sophisticated models or rigorous analysis. It's a shortcut, an oversimplified reduction, arbitrarily divided by two.
And because we are being very kind, we're kind people, we will charge them approximately half of what they are and have been charging us.
The idea behind them was that Trump could use the tariffs we're imposing and say, oh, you're imposing a 90% tariff, but we're going to impose a 45% tariff. So let's negotiate your tariffs down. But when the 90% number is fake, then what do you do? Like, how do you negotiate it down? If you're Cambodia or Vietnam, how do you know how far to bring it down? And what are you even bringing down? Because the core problem isn't the trade barriers you have in place. The core problem is you're not buying enough stuff from the United States, and we're buying too much stuff, in Trump's mind, from you.
I'll show you one last thing. This list, you know, one other thing I found curious was how so many countries have exactly 10% written here as the effective tariff rate that they charge the U.S. Isn't that weird? Like, all these countries charge the U.S. the exact same 10% rate? Well, again, I checked every single one, and all of them, all 115 of them, actually buy more from the U.S. than they sell, which gives the U.S. a trade surplus. As in, by Trump's definition, these are the countries the U.S. currently rips off. But Trump's answer to that is to punish them anyway, to charge their goods a 10% tariff. I don't know what logic explains that.
And that piece coming out of CBC News, a Canadian broadcaster, effectively explaining how the Trump administration seemed to have come across with these quote-unquote reciprocal tariffs, which clearly are not really reciprocal because they didn't really base it on any actual tariff that may be in place. In fact, I do suspect that in the case of, say, St. Lucia and many countries in the Eastern Caribbean, if we were to apply the true tariffs for a lot of goods, and of course the way our tariff systems work, it's based on the type of product that you're bringing in, not necessarily, of course, the country that it is actually originating out of. And so, of course, whether it's coming from, once you don't have a trade, a free trade arrangement, like, for example, what we have in place with the EU, But any other country, whether it's coming from China or whether it's coming from the United States, if you're importing a particular item, you're going to get a 20% or a 30% or maybe whatever, a 40% tariff. And that's how we work out our tariffs. In fact, remember, we also, as part of CARICOM, have an entire regime to handle tariffs. That's the common external tariff. But I'm sure the effective tariff, if they were to calculate it, they may very well find that it actually is probably higher than what was applied to St. Lucia and the rest of the Caribbean. And but that is because we are largely import-driven countries. We depend tremendously on the imports of goods because of our size limitations in terms of product production. And so we got slapped with a 10% tariff, which I'm actually saying is probably lower than what it would have been if, in fact, it was a reciprocal tariff. But the reality is we are running a deficit against the United States of America in terms of our trade with them. And so putting a 10% tariff is maybe going to impact some business. When you look at what is being imported to the United States, there's a possibility, but there's also a possibility that it'll just simply mean that the goods that we are actually exporting to the U.S. will become more expensive to the U.S. consumer. Does that potentially mean that it's going to be something that they're not going to buy outright? Maybe, maybe not. And the uncertainty here is, if you are running in a situation where all the goods coming into the United States, especially from other countries where the tariffs are much higher and for which they are far more dependent in terms of the volume of imports, is going to be going up even more than they're going up from our country, it then means that there may be challenges in terms of those goods. Now, you could also argue that there's actually a potential benefit to St. Lucia and the Caribbean, because in a way, we are now relatively more competitive compared to a lot of other countries. So in other words, if the effective tax rate on the U.S. is actually, this tariff rate is going up to 22.5%, and we're at 10%, It actually means that you actually have an advantage over a lot of other countries around the world now. Do we have the opportunity necessarily to leverage that advantage? And it depends, because, you know, let's say if theoretically that's the case. But the other challenge, of course, is that do we have the productive capacity to be able to necessarily make such things attractive? So, really and truly, perhaps not. But you never know. It may be in certain products. You may actually be seeing an increase in demand for actual goods. So let's just say, for argument, in terms of a real life example, if the United States was importing CMOS from Vietnam, right, which is now facing a 47% tariff on imports versus imports of CMOS from St. Lucia, where it's now facing a 10% tariff. St. Lucia actually is kind of better off. Well, of course, depending on what is that end price, depending on how much we sell our CMOS versus what Vietnam might be selling their CMOS for. So a lot of those things, of course, are adding a lot of concern in some quarters, of course, and there's no doubt about it. But I think, the truth be told, the tariffs themselves are not our biggest worry in terms of what is the tariff set on St. Lucia. The bigger worry in terms of the efforts of the Trump administration is on other aspects within the space, this global war that we're facing, in particular the issues of port fees and the risk, the greater risk, of course, that the United States may well be seeing a recession before the end of 2025. That's our dish of the day. We're going to take in our weather report at this time. And of course, when we come back, we'll take in some calls.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need tests for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus. Did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got glassware and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down to my new body. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Clark Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Island style. Oh, yeah. We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice. Island style. Whoa. We got the time that will make you happy. Island style. Oh, yeah. We make your dream come alive in Island style.
We have tiles and tin sets, pieces and ground. Peace out the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. Quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Thailand Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
So, of course, on the 1.1, it's now time for the weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Star Talimba. The weather for San Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours. The winds will be blowing from between the east, northeast, and east near 25 miles per hour or 41 kilometers per hour with occasional gusts. The weather partly cloudy and windy, becoming cloudy at times with a few light to moderate showers. There is an advisory in here which reads small craft operators and sea beavers are strongly advised to exercise extreme caution due to brisk winds and rough seas. The forecast for the Antilles, partly cloudy and windy, becoming cloudy at times with scattered light to moderate showers. And the weather summary, the Atlantic high pressure system will continue to generate moderate to brisk easterly winds and locally rough seas across the eastern Caribbean region for the next couple of days. Matches of low-level clouds drifting along the wind flow will produce scattered showers over the Lesser Antilles during the next 24 hours. And this was the weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Star Talimba.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Star. Oh, yeah. We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice.
Pieces and ground. Everything you need, peace out the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. Quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Thailand Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. And of course, we're going to try to take in some calls at this time. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. And what's on your plate today?
Good afternoon, Mr. George.
Hi, caller. How are you doing?
Yeah, that was a good piece there you played. On, you know, making, you know, people well, I guess. But exactly how, or is this an assumption?
No, no, no. That was from one source, but nearly every other source, I mean, that I've looked at has, in fact, analyzed what the data is showing from all the lists that they provided. That's actually how they went about calculating it.
That's how they actually went about calculating
it. That is, yeah. So, in fact, they
actually have no data in terms of a document.
Right, and in fact...
A document.
In fact, I think when they were pressed for an explanation, they provided a formula. And the formula is, in fact, based on the... It's actually what was being suggested. They were looking at the trade imbalances, really, and not at tariffs.
That sounds so simplistic, Alex.
But it is very... It's not just very simplistic, but it's also blatantly untrue.
Like America with so many high-powered, economists and so on and so forth.
But caller, remember, it's reciprocal. They've wrapped it as a reciprocal tariff, but the truth about it is that there's nothing about reciprocity in this regime that is being brought forward. It is simply a response to what are perceived as trade imbalances, that the U.S. is running too high a deficit, and
packaging within promises, I guess.
And of course,
campaign promises.
That's correct, because remember he's running a trade deficit. That trade, he's also trying to, fill the gap of a fiscal deficit, yeah. Right? For him to be able to meet that fiscal deficit, he's got to get revenue,
yeah.
And he's got to sell that as something that is going to be beneficial to the American economy. And so he's clothed it as saying, hey, it's a tariff. Now, of course, people have consistently said a tariff is a tax. The tariff that you're talking about, you can effectively say it's an import tax. That's what you're doing. And he has still insisted that, hey, this is going to protect American industry and it's going to encourage the growth of companies. Companies will come back into the United States to manufacture. And this is what he's selling. The reality, unfortunately, is going to be very, very different.
It is triggering a reaction that he didn't anticipate.
Well, I think I'm not sure that he did not anticipate the reaction, because many individuals have said that this is what is going to happen. If you're going to be bringing on what I think is effectively $6 trillion worth of tariffs, in other words, the U.S. economy now has to find a significant more amount of money now to pay for these items, these imports which are coming into the country. How is that necessarily going to be beneficial to the manufacturers that you claim that you're going to be bringing in? But if it's having an impact on the imports of inputs into the manufacturing process, that's not going to benefit you, right? I mean, one of the interesting things that I noticed China is doing, in addition to actually placing an import, they've increased their tariff to 34% on American products in response to Trump's tariff proposal. Well, his action, I should say, no longer a proposal. And they've also saying that they're going to be banning certain items from being exported to the United States as well, in particular rare earth metals, which are very important in the technology companies that you're seeing in terms of their own manufacturing. So they're also stymieing things that the United States really needs. So I think many are wondering how long this is actually going to last for, because we saw how the battle played out with Mexico and with Canada over the issue of tariffs. He had to back down, and then he came back again, and he backed down again, and it's a sort of a back and forth. But I think what is very unfortunate, though, is that it's created such an environment of uncertainty, not just in the United States, not just in but all around the world now. There's so much uncertainty, and that can never be good for business. People are are very concerned as to, well, what do we do? Should we spend money on this? Should we hold back? You know, and of course, that is having a knock-on impact on the stock market. So people are pulling away. And of course, we saw, I think, today, what, nearly 5% drop in the U.S. market. So you're seeing a very stark drop and an impact on the U.S. economy. And so for us, that I think is the biggest threat. And we were having that conversation yesterday. The biggest threat really for us is that we are so dependent on the spending power of the U.S. economy. This is where we've seen the greatest growth in terms of tourism arrivals coming out of the U.S. So
okay, all right.
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Sure, please. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it seems that this gentleman was sold on the idea that, America could be a self-sufficient, there was enough critical mass and resources available to stand on its own and not and resist all other, forces and still be able to be great as a superpower and maintain its status and influence.
Mm-hmm.
But how is that going to happen when you're doing these things to your friends? Your friends make you great,
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're the ones who, over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, colleagues, how is that going to affect? Remember, our dollar is pegged to the U.S., eh?
It is.
How is that going to affect our dollar?
Well, part of what some of us are saying, too, is that Mr. Trump is actually trying to devalue the U.S. dollar.
But
devaluation...
It's devalued because, people will invest more overseas.
And so they're thinking that a devaluation would be beneficial to the U.S. because then their products would be more competitive against other products.
Yes.
And
now the impact of that on us now.
Now the impact of that on us is very chancy because of course because we're pegged. Is it going to impact on our spending power? Right. I think it probably is going to.
If we choose other partners.
Yeah.
Trading partners and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The same way America has. Deliberately attempted to devalue things so it could increase its trade. That wouldn't have the same impact on us because we don't really trade the level at which we trade as much. We don't really export anything of substance to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, it's because we pegged to them. And because we're
a buyer of products from outside and paying more for it without necessarily that measure wouldn't have any,
Right. Now, if it was that...
We had the mechanism to increase our export, to deal with the depreciation of the American dollar, then you would see some sort of benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But we have no structures in place to deal with that. And the way this is happening, it's happening so fast and that it's like we'll get caught with our pants down. The value, have fewer tourists from America.
Well, the risk would be more for, well... If the dollar devalues relative to other currencies,
our purchasing power will
your purchasing power in particular with respect to imports from other current countries would be challenged. So like for example, I think right now maybe about 60% of our imports are non-US, right? So about 40 from the U.S., I think. So the question is, those other imports, of course, would then be relatively more expensive right?
Yeah.
The flip side, in terms of how competitive you become, is a little bit challenging because most of your revenue is coming from tourism. Yeah. And right now, a growing proportion of those tourists are actually coming from the U.S., and less so from Canada and
our
the U.K.
Our foreign assets are held in U.S.
Mostly. And our foreign assets are held in the U.S. as well. Yes, yes. U.S. dollars.
Our holdings in IMF and so on and so
forth. And so, of course, then there are questions as to, well, you know, are we going to be seeing a shift in terms of, a diversity in how we hold our assets. Would we want to be holding euros as well as other currencies? The U.S. has threatened countries about that too, about shifting away. They in fact threatened BRICS countries regarding the shift away from the U.S. Reserve.
In the past it's been said that we don't even, our economic policy don't focus too much on monetary
policy.
It's busy on fiscal. But this situation is sort of forcing us to take a serious look at our monetary options,
I think this situation is an opportunity to look at nearly everything that we do at this point in time. That we've taken a lot of things for granted, who we trade with, where our goods come from. What are we producing? We have not perhaps taken our trade portfolio seriously enough, right? And
it truly make us realize that we're not living in a bubble,
We are not living in a bubble. That's exactly correct. And we've taken for granted the stability of the world, that the U.S. is always there.
Yes, that we respect to the U.S. and it's stable.
Right.
The economy is stable, and everything. And now what we feel here.
Yes.
Forcing us to wake up and realize, well, look, man, you say you're independent. Let me see how independent you are now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, you're right.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for that point, caller. Thanks very much for that. And, of course, the number to call in to tell us what's on your plate today is 4523046. And as I was mentioning, there are so many different moving parts. One of the certainly very concerning ones, however, has more to do with the issue of shipping and logistics, right? Shipping costs certainly are a significant factor in terms of the cost of items here in St. Lucia. Everything has to be shipped from somewhere. There's a cost involved in that. There are different players. And if those costs are going to be going up, based on certain proposed actions by the U.S., then we're going to have to be very concerned about those. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Hello, Mr. George.
How are you, caller?
Not too bad.
Wonderful.
Now, we have a safe, a long time we have that say. American cough, we catch the cold. And what's going on there? The OECS islands, they will catch the cold. Because most of them based on tourists. And anything happen to America right now, if they go in recession, we'll pay for it. And the other thing I have to say is America shouldn't charge none of the OECS country any tariff. Leave it as it was. We not pay no tax because they expose all the garment into those islands there, and those people crave for those things. And so why should we exporting so little to America, exporting so much to us, and then they put 10% tariff on us?
They put in the 10% tariffs on us, yes, but they're putting even higher tariffs on others. So in a way, caller, we actually getting off more beneficial in that sense
Mr. George, in which way we benefit from it?
We benefit
nothing.
We benefit to the extent
show me where we benefit.
we benefit to the extent that, right, our products that are going into the United States will be going in at a lower tariff than many other places in the world. So, in fact, it actually is a benefit to us in that sense. And this holds out, because what I'm saying is actually something that, in terms of some of the economic analysis that has been done, they were looking at who really gets impacted. And they were saying that the UK, which is also being placed at a 10% tariff.
10%.
Right? The UK was placed at a 10% tariff because it's one of those countries that actually has a deficit against the United States in terms of trade. The U.S. exports more to them than they export to the U.S. So that's why they end up being placed in this 10% tariff bracket too. And they were actually saying that it for the U.K., it's actually a benefit because they will actually be more competitive compared to, say, Europe, where European countries are going to be placing on a higher tariff, right? So remember, it's trade. Right, so if you're looking for a product, if the product can be sourced from,
I look on the world right now, it's a amalgamated thing. It's a mix of things. We they build a car, the car built in several a piece of parts built in different countries. You see
it, right? And so where it is going to be problematic for us is from the perspective of our high dependency on trade of imports into.
Yeah.
From the United States into St. Lucia, right? If the U.S. is now going to be seeing a significant inflationary pressure because of these tariffs, we are going to be facing that very same thing because we're getting those imports through them. If it can be that we don't necessarily have to buy from them, but we're actually buying from these other countries which are now facing U.S. tariffs, right? It might be actually... they might be more keen to be able to say, hey, well, can we provide you with this instead? We don't want to go into the U.S. market, but we can trade with you. So it really means now that countries have to, it could potentially benefit us in that our imports could be more attractive. What we produce could be more attractive within the U.S. market relative to other producers of the same items. It could be opportunities in terms of maybe even producing things here that are now more expensive in other countries.
George, so we can hold America to ransom as well, because
I don't know about that, but I think we're pushing
right
it.
Right now, all the computer chips making the world, and they say they're going to put a lot of factory of real earth, and that coming, a lot of that coming straight from Africa.
Well, China,
cars they make in this world today. They use a lot
China is doing a bit of that. They're trying
to use a lot of copper, not like the
right.
Diesel
so
cars and
so part of
cars.
Right, and so part of the
Zambia is one of the biggest copper countries.
So what they're doing as well is that some of these countries are in their trade wars is that they're saying, hey, you know, you need us more than we need you. So we have certain elements, certain materials that you actually need for your production systems. Right, and we've got them. We won't give them to you anymore, and so they're doing that in some instances in certain products, and we saw that with China and the rare earth metals. Canada has been playing that same kind of hardball with the United States as well. I'm not sure that we have anything that we can do in terms of that,
but we don't have nothing. Our Africa is our brothers.
What we definitely have to realize is that we've got to open our eyes and certainly look at the opportunities and also be very agile in terms of shifting our gaze. Maybe we don't even have eyes won't even open, but now we need to be open and we need to be looking around to see where we can get opportunities, especially in terms of other products which. Can come in from other markets, which may even be cheaper than the U.S. market. So
why one man can sit down and think to bring the world almost wreck the whole world just like that? That man is a demagogue. That man is a demague.
Well, you know, okay, Colin, thanks very much. There's good public policy and there's bad public policy. There's good tax policy and there's bad tax policy. And sometimes people think they have good ideas, which aren't very good ideas, and they haven't been well thought out. They haven't been well analyzed, and there are real implications. And so we're going to have to see how it all pans out. Many people think that, hey, there's some benefit and there's some good in what Mr. Trump is doing, at least from the perspective of the United States. There's some people who argue, well, you know, there has to be some pain before you can gain. Certain decisions are tough decisions to make, but you got to do them now so that you can reap the benefits later. And those arguments are quite often made, I mean, by some economists who tell you, you know, well, you don't want to devalue the dollar, your currency, but you've got to do it, and there'll be some immediate pain, but then overall the benefits will come back in the end. So lots and lots of speculation. Lots of people are saying that it's really bad in terms of the outlook and the potential for recession. And if you have to look at the economic history of it, generally speaking, once you've seen this extent of tariffs being introduced, there tends to be the potential for recession. And recession from the world's largest economy is never going to be a good thing for the world, to be honest. And certainly for us who are so very close and so dependent on the U.S., we certainly have to be very concerned and very wary of these changes that are coming. Many of these things, of course, we are completely out of our control and influence. But what we can control, certainly, we do need to pay very special attention to that and try to see how we can get out with the best outcomes in these situations. That's all the time we have here today for the lunchroom and, of course, for the weekend. We do hope that you can have a safe and blessed weekend. I'm your host, Calix George Jr., saying goodbye.